Good evening, everyone. You're looking at a remarkable bronze work, and in the centre, of course, you can see Jesus on the cross. But it's also got the Jesus who's placing his whole trust in the Father, the kind of glorification, or the perhaps we could say the resurrection is in that piece of work too. The words that are placed on Jesus' lips by Mark and then Matthew are the first words of Psalm 22. My God, why have you abandoned me? Taking us to the depths of the bewilderment, pain, isolation, and all the other words you can well use of Jesus at this moment. But the psalm itself includes both elements of that piece. It does begin, yes, with this sense of abandonment, but then it reaches up in a sense of trust and hope. These words aren't in the psalm, but it's "Into your hands I commend my spirit." That feeling is also there. Tomorrow morning I propose to take you through looking at Jesus and his dying on the cross, beginning our Holy Week. Tonight I want to just reflect with you on the psalm itself, to see how rich it is and how often, as you probably already know, how often texts from it are used in the account of Jesus' passion and death. It was their favourite text. It picked up better than any other of their poetry or their music or their psalms. It picked up the feeling they had as they watched Jesus die on the cross. Introducing firstly the psalm. People are mocking the psalmist. Let's put Jesus for the moment. We'll deal with that tomorrow. Let's try to go back and get the feel of the psalm in its own right. So people are mocking the psalmist, who's calling on God seemingly in vain. He remembers what God did in reply to the cry of his ancestors. He learnt this since a child, all about God looking after his people. He knows that. He remembers too his own earlier experiences of intimacy with God. He'll recall those in the psalm. Desperate, he describes the situation in which he finds himself, and he pleads with God, promising to acknowledge God's response in the public assembly. If you come to my assistance, I'll stand up in the public assembly and tell everyone how wonderful you are. That's part of his prayer. The psalm, as I've already indicated, takes a sudden turn in verse 23, which begins a prolonged hymn of thankful praise. In fact, of all the psalms, it's the longest section of praise. Has his prayer been answered? Is this a profound act of faith that God, who hears the cry of the poor, has heard his cry? And so God's response is certain? Mark 15:34 and Matthew 27:46 place the opening words on the lips of the dying Jesus. And the Gospel writers borrowed a number of expressions from this psalm in their account of the Passion. Let us begin. My God, my God, why have you abandoned me? Here's the gospel. Jesus cried out with a loud voice. This is Aramaic, Jesus' own native tongue. Eloi, Eloi, lema sabachthani. And Mark translates that for us. My God, why have you abandoned me? In another psalm we read, those who know your name put their trust in you, for you, Lord, have not forsaken, abandoned those who seek you. Another psalm, Psalm 16. My heart is glad, says the psalmist. My soul rejoices. My body too rests secure. For you do not let your faithful one see the pit, burial, death. Psalm 27. Do not hide your face from me. Do not turn your servant away in anger. You who have been my help, do not cast me off. Do not abandon me. O God of my salvation, if my father and mother forsake me, the Lord will raise me up. These are prayers Jesus would have prayed with his father Joseph and his mother Mary and in the synagogue all his life. He's familiar with them. Trusting in God who'll never abandon us. Psalm 37. The Lord will not forsake his faithful ones. Psalm 94, the Lord will not forsake his people. He will not abandon his chosen ones, his heritage. In other psalms, that's their faith we've heard, but does God sometimes does feel far away? Here's Psalm 22. Do not be far from me. Obviously the psalmist feels God is far, but he's telling God, no, don't, come close. Trouble is near. There's no one to help me. These are bits that'll come later in our psalm. You, O Lord, don't be far away. O my help, come quickly to my aid. Psalm 35. You've seen, O Lord, do not be silent. Do not be far from me. And Psalm 38. Do not forsake me, O Lord, O my God. Do not be far from me. Make haste to help me, O Lord, my salvation. Psalm 78. They say, pursue and seize that person whom God has forsaken, for there's no one to deliver. O God, do not be far from me. O my God, make haste to help. And Jeremiah writes, am I a God nearby, says the Lord? Am I not a God far off? Jeremiah felt both. Jesus feels both. You and I feel both. Isaiah, seek the Lord while he may be found. Call upon him while he's near. So all that reflection was meant to open up the constant faith of Israel in this complex business of God being near or far, feeling abandoned but believing we're not, knowing in faith that we're not. So the psalm now, back to Psalm 22, goes on. How, imagine Jesus on the cross praying, because the first two lines are given us by the psalmist, so that we'll read the whole psalm, which they reckon captures the feeling of the crucifixion better than any other text. The text goes on, how far from saving me the words I groan. Can you imagine Jesus praying that? How far from saving me are the words I groan. I call all day, my God, but you do not answer. I call all night long, and I cannot rest. In a moment's time, later in the psalm, we're going to hear, do not stand off. Trouble is near, and I've got no one to assist. We're allowed to hear Jesus praying all of this. In fact, that's what the gospel writers want us to do, to make it real. In verse 19, we're going to hear, you, Lord, do not stand aside. O my strength, come quickly to my aid. Psalm 35, you've seen, Lord, don't be silent. Do not be far from me. Psalm 78, they say, pursue and seize that person whom God has forsaken. We can hear the high priests yelling this kind of stuff out from the wall as Jesus is dying. If you're the Son of God, come down from the cross. Show us who you really are. Use power for us. Pursue, seize that person whom God has forsaken, for there is no one to deliver. Oh God, do not be far from me. Oh my God, make haste to help me. Psalm 38, do not forsake me, Lord. O my God, do not be far from me. Make haste to help me, Lord, my salvation. And then our psalm continues. Yet you dwell in the holy temple. You are the praise of Israel. In you our ancestors trusted. They trusted. You rescued them. Egypt, Red Sea, you know the story. To you they cried, and they escaped. In you they trusted. And never in vain. So remembering the creed, the past, their memory, their story. You'll find some of that echoed in this lovely book of wisdom, the book of Sirach. Consider the advice he's giving to his students. Consider the generation of old and see, has anyone trusted in the Lord and been disappointed? Has anyone persevered in the fear of the Lord and been forsaken? He's expecting the answer, no. Has anyone called upon God and been neglected? Well, Psalm 22 feels like the answer may not be. No, of course not. Here am I, says the psalmist. You've done that for my ancestors. Here am I, more worm than human, scorned and despised. All who see me deride me. They toss their heads and sneer. He relied on God. Let the Lord save him. Let God come to his aid, if God loves him that much. And for those of us who are here this morning, Isaiah has this to say. He talking about his contemporary, but also applied to Jesus. He was despised and rejected by others, a man of suffering, acquainted with infirmity. And as one from whom others hide their faces, he was despised, and we held him of no account. In the second chapter of the Book of Wisdom, the most recent of the Old Testament texts, written maybe when Jesus was a boy, it's that contemporary. And in that second chapter, the author of this book writes, he professes to have, it's not about Jesus, of course, but the link can be made, he professes to have knowledge of God. He calls himself a child of God. We are considered by him as something base. You can hear the scribes and Pharisees saying this. They're wrong, but you can hear them saying it. He avoids our ways as unclean. He calls the last end of the righteous happy. He boasts that God is his father. Let's see if his words are true. Let's test what will happen at the end of his life. For if the righteous man is God's child, God will help him and will deliver him from the hand of his adversaries. So let's test him. Brackets. Let's crucify him. Matthew's text, talking about the crucifixion. Those who passed by derided Jesus, shaking their heads. He trusts in God. Let God deliver him now if he wants to. The bandits who were crucified with him, says Matthew, also taunted him in the same way. Jesus, in Mark and then in Matthew, is totally isolated. Here's Mark again. Well, that was Matthew. This is Mark. Those who passed by derided him, shaking their heads. Save yourself. Come down from the cross. They're asking Jesus to do exactly the thing he can't possibly do. Essential to his teaching was, if you want to save yourself, you'll lose yourself. That's not the way to go. If you give yourself, then you'll find yourself. So they're telling him to save himself. Come down from the cross. And those who were crucified with him also taunted him. And Luke, The leaders scoffed at him, saying, "He saved others. Let him save himself, if he is the Messiah of God, God's chosen one." Yet, our psalm goes on, "It was you who took me from the womb. You entrusted me to my mother's breast." So here's the psalmist remembering the past, yes. Now he's remembering his own childhood and the joy he had going to the synagogue, and with his mother and father teaching him how to read these scriptures. He's remembering all this, and he says, "It was you who took me from the womb. You entrusted me to my mother's breasts. Placed on your lap from my birth, from my mother's womb, you are my God." Excuse that gobbledygook there. Obviously it didn't transfer from my laptop, but I'll tell you what it should have said. "You are my God" in Hebrew is Eli. El is God. Eli, my God. Atta, you. Eli Atta. You are my God. I wonder whether those words capture what Jesus actually said on the cross that caused those who heard him to go to the Bible and get us to read this psalm. Why I suggest that is Eli Atta, Eli my God, Atta you. If you listen carefully, I'll say it again but slightly differently. Instead of Eli Atta, I'll say Eliata. I hope you heard the difference. Eliata means Elijah, come. And do you remember in the story of the gospel how one of the bystanders said, "He's calling on Elijah"? Eliata, Elijah, come. That's Aramaic. Jesus was actually saying, perhaps, Eli, my God, Atta, you, in Hebrew. Psalm 71. "You, Lord, are my hope, my trust, Lord, from my youth. Upon you I've leaned from my birth. It was you who took me from my mother's womb. My praise is continually of you." Picking up some of the feeling again of this psalm. And now Psalm 22. "Stay close to me. Trouble is near, and I've got no one to help." Matthew's account of the Passion in the garden, "My betrayer is at hand." Then, powerful imagery to get the feeling of what it's like, including what it's like to be crucified. "A pack of bulls encircle me, fierce bulls of Bashan close in on me. For me they open wide their jaws like ravenous, roaring lions. I'm poured out like water. All my bones are out of joint. My heart is like wax, melting within my breast. My mouth is dried up like a potsherd, and my tongue sticks to my jaw." And then this tragic line. This is all happening around him. And then the psalmist says, "You," he's talking to God, "you lay me in the dust of death. The rest of it is all terrible, but that God would actually do this to the psalmist is terrifying. You laid me in the dust of death. My comment here. In his pain, the psalmist seems to see God now close, but in the circle of his enemies, God's there, pounding him into the dust of death. The God who brought him forth from the womb. This is his most excruciating pain, that God would turn against him. The God in whom his ancestor trusted, the God in whom his mother and father and his youth was full of. This is the God that's abandoned and encircling him. Dogs, the psalm goes on, dogs hunt me, a gang of villains closes me in. They tear at my hands and feet, determined to take my life. I can count all my bones. They glare at me and gloat. They divide up my clothes and cast lots for my robe. You know how that's picked up in the gospel too, because it was customary for soldiers to chuck a dice and whatever little clothing or sandals the person being crucified, that they could take that. So that was happening to Jesus too, but here it is in the psalm. And here's John's account of Jesus. The soldiers took Jesus' clothes and divided them into four parts, one for each soldier, leaving aside his tunic. This was to fulfill what the scripture said, they divided my clothes among themselves, and for my robe they cast lots. John, working his way through the Bible, found this psalm and how suitable it was to describe what he saw standing there with the mother happening to Jesus. And back to Psalm 22. But you, O Lord, do not leave me. O my strength, come quickly to my aid. Rescue me from the sword. Rescue my life from the mauling of the dogs. Save me from the lion's jaws, from the horns of the wild bulls. And then he makes this promise, kind of bargaining with God, but I'll proclaim your name to my brothers and sisters. In the midst of the congregation, I will praise you. A couple of lines that are quoted in the letter to the Hebrews. And also in John. I've made your name known to those whom you gave me. And now we enter wave upon wave of praise of God. I'll explain it when it comes, but the first wave is the psalmist and the community praising God. If you go back to that icon, it's Jesus trusting in this God in spite of feeling everything that you've picked up so far in this psalm. The psalm now says, he's promised if God saves him, he'll go to the assembly. And it's happened. So he says, praise you who revere the Lord. Give glory, all you children of Jacob. Stand in awe, all you children of Israel. For the Lord did not despise or scorn the condition of this wretch. God's love remained fixed on me, hearing me when I cried. So when you find on the lips of Jesus, my God, why have you forsaken me? That's taken from here. You're meant to read on. This is also giving us an insight into what's happening in the heart of Jesus on the cross. You are the theme of my praise in the great congregation. That's the church. My vows I will pay before your faithful. The poor eat and are satisfied. Those who seek the Lord utter praise. May they never lose heart. That's the advice given us by this psalmist who's been through dreadful things. But he's saying to each of us, don't lose heart, because God did hear my cry. He always hears the cry of the poor. Then a second wave of praise. The first one is from the psalmist and the congregation. The second praise is from all the world, amazed at how wonderful God is. All the ends of the earth will remember and turn to the Lord. All the families of nations will worship the Lord who rules over the nations. Another psalm, Psalm 86. All the nations you have made shall come and bow down before you, O Lord, and glorify your name. This is their hope. It's still our hope, the joy of the gospel. Zephaniah. To him shall bow down each in its place, all the coasts and islands of the nations. Jeremiah. Who would not fear you, O King of the nations? For that is your due among all the wise ones of the nations. And in all their kingdoms, there's no one like you. The Christian God is really worth believing in. And Obadiah. Those who've been saved shall go up to Mount Zion to rule Mount Esau, it's the Edomite area, and the kingdom shall be the Lord's. Now comes a third wave of praise, and this is the only place you find this in the whole of the Bible, the Old Testament Bible. It goes to an absolute extreme. To God indeed shall bow down all who go down to the dust. This is before they were aware of resurrection or life after death. But they had this innate intuition that somehow or other there was more to life than what we experience, an ending in death. In God indeed shall bow down all who go down into the dust. And I too with all my being, if God preserves me. My descendants will worship, future generations will be told about the Lord and will proclaim God's justice to a people yet unborn. Look what God has done. I'm nearing the end of this. I'll just take you now to the first letter of Peter, and he writes, it's a credit to you if, being aware of God, you endure pain while suffering unjustly. If you endure when you are beaten for doing wrong, what credit is that? But if you endure when you do right, and you suffer for it, you have God's approval, says Peter. And you know where he learned this. For to this you have been called, because Christ also suffered for you, leaving you an example, so that you should follow in his steps. And he quotes Isaiah. He committed no sin, and no deceit was found in his mouth. When he was abused, Peter continues, he did not return abuse. When he suffered, he didn't threaten, but he entrusted himself to the one who judges justly. And again, from Peter, rejoice insofar as you are sharing Christ's sufferings, so that you may also be glad and shout for joy. And how better than Psalm 22, shout for joy when his glory is revealed. That's the exalted Jesus. Into your hands I commit my spirit. This is Pentecost. If you are reviled for the name of Christ, you are blessed. Because the Spirit of glory, which is the Spirit of God, is resting on you. But let none of you suffer as a murderer, a thief, a criminal, or even as a mischief maker. Yet if any of you suffer as a Christian, says Peter, do not consider it a disgrace, but glorify God, because you bear his name. So what I've tried to do with you this evening is just give you this one psalm, which the New Testament, and then of course the liturgy of the church, keeps referring back to when it wants to tell us the dreadful story of Jesus' crucifixion and the amazing story of his exaltation. And I'm going to finish now with a piece of music called Present Among Us. Experienced no way more personally than in the Eucharist.